people are scared, and that's programmed into us. We're all in the West. We're scared to death, quite literally in some cases, of criticizing Israel, which leads me to believe they are the greatest threat in the West, which I've tweeted, because they are the ones dragging us into foreign wars. They are the ones getting us in trouble. It's not good.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fox and Father with me, the Fox, and him, the
Father.
It's a show where I smoke a cigar. Calvin talks about why I'm wrong about the Jordan. And, well, it's become that show. And, we talk about whether World War III is imminent or happening. And, you know, and we try and count on two hands how many diversity is our strength killers we've had in 1 week in Britain. And it's still light, and spring has sprung. So that's the good news.
That's good, because it's not sprung here. Since I last spoke to you, the snow came down again, and it's gone cold again. The snow is clearing up a little bit now, but it's very overcast. It's very meh right now. So I'm looking forward to finally getting here. It makes such a difference.
Forgive the mess, but look at that. That is spring springing. That is spring springing, that is. Let me get that back into it's almost better than my first position. How is the father?
I did like last week seeing like the sun set behind you throughout the episode. It got darker and it was quite beautiful.
It'll happen the same this week. That's why I've got a little one of these, which I can turn on when Harrison, who doesn't like to be named, start saying things like, you look like Casper the ghost.
So, not a friendly ghost, just Casper the ghost.
Yeah, just Casper the ghost. How are we?
Yeah, good. We're 2 weeks into Lent now, so haven't had anything nice in 2 weeks, and the weather isn't great, so I'm pretty meh overall, but there are worse things, and Christ ultimately sacrificed himself for us, so none of this... I was going to say none of this suffering really matters, but it's not actually suffering. We don't like any inconvenience in our lives these days, and I am the same as anyone else. So I'm looking forward to Easter. Let's just say that.
So we've got 2 weeks to go to Easter.
Yeah.
Good. And it sounds like you've given up a multitude of things for Ramadan. I mean, Lent.
I don't even know what Ramadan is. I don't know why you talk about Ramadan every day. I see you tweeting, "It's the 12th day of Ramadan." I'm like, what are you doing?
I'll answer that. Like, it's a serious question, even though it's not. One of the steps in demystifying the Islamo, you're not allowed to criticize Islam thing, is to mock the hell out of it. That's why it says you're not allowed to mock it. You can't even draw a picture of the Prophet Muhammad. So one of the early steps in making people feel like it's okay to take the piss out of Islam is just to mock it relentlessly. So that there is a little bit of method to my madness on that one. But anyway, yeah.
How are you?
How am I?
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. So my ULEZ trial for saying that ULEZ cameras are crap.
Yeah.
The one where they went to put me in prison for 4 years, you know. That one. That's been delayed until 2028.
Because the whole ULEZ thing is wicked, man. It's like big brother everywhere.
Everywhere. That, interestingly, you know, yeah, so that's been delayed till 2028 because, you know, it's absolutely criminal that there are men and women on remand in prisons. You haven't been put in front of a jury of their peers, but they're very happy to squeeze laws in.
Yeah.
But it is actually a more complicated case, so that's good. And I think they said it's a not non-high priority case. So there we are. We will have to deal with that one in 2028. Maybe Keir Starmer, once David Lammy's got rid of jury trials in Britain, they can throw me into that one where I just stand there in front of a judge and he goes, "What you've done with ULEZ cameras is worse than the systemic rape of all of the British girls. You must go to prison." And this man, Mohammed Salifa Ibrahim Suleiman, is going to get a knighthood for services to child rape.
Yeah.
And then my other one is 2027, and then I'm starting a new company, which I'm very excited about. And what else is really good news? Oh, it's going to be quite funny.
Are you going to wind down at the other companies?
I'm going to do a lot less politics, put it that way. Seeing as I've never been a big fan of politics, and I don't like doing it. So I'm not going to do any... Well, I'll do a little bit. I'm going to do stuff over the mayoral campaign, because someone's got to point out how silly the whole thing is. And there's a large proportion of Londoners who don't want a mayor at all. And if they didn't have one, they'd have 450 quid a year in their pocket. So you could just say, got the mayor, get rid of the mayor. And then you could run an underhand subversive campaign where you said things like, we're going to ban the burqa in London, you're going to have to see our faces, et cetera, et cetera, without really leaving the front doorstep to be called a racist by the people you invited into your country, treated, venerated and worshipped. But it just wasn't quite enough. So they have to turn around to you just because you have white skin and call you a racist. So, yeah. Sorry. That's what I'm going to do. I've got good focus on that one. And then I'm about to get... Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be fun. This is going to be really fun, this one. I'm about to get... If you Google my name, it's like Lawrence Fox forced to pay 90 grand or this or that or this or that. I'm about to... I mean, I must speak to a PR person. Actually, remind me to do that, because I'm about to get a monstrous check.
Good.
A really large one. And I'm really looking forward to it. And not only is that going to be... Yet? No.
Okay, can you say what it's related to?
It's related to my victory in October in the Court of Appeal. But that's just the beginning. So... This check is just the first check, and there will be more checks. I will be pursuing. So it's a great lesson in life to go, never give up. Don't let people call you. And also, again, as with lots of things that I sort of try and do, it's not really for my benefit. It's for the benefit of the greater good, which is that people that want to call you names and ruin your life and call you a racist or whatever they want to call you, their little virtue signaling ways are about to cost them loads of money. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's not the ideal way of, I'd much rather sit down at a table with someone and talk to them openly about it. But if you're going to wage war on me, you're going to get war waged in return. I'm just one of those people. I don't mind. So yeah, there's going to be a oh God, the judgment. I'm not very good at reading judgments because they're hard and full of legal gobbledygook. But yeah, this one I read and I was like, oh, yeah. So this is what I will say. There is a collusion within the corruption of the establishment in every country. And what it is it's the collusion. I don't know if America has this, but Britain certainly does. It's the collusion between the respondent and the applicant's legal teams. So the applicant can say, you called me, you know, whatever. Think of a slander which isn't related to mine. You called me I can't think of one that's not related to mine. Come on, Calvin, use your brain.
And there's another file.
Oh, what? And is that, yeah. And is that, well, yeah, but I mean, that's actually protected, strangely. But so, you know, what happens is the respondent, the applicant, then pays a large legal team to go and clear their name.
Right.
Unbeknownst to them, the respondent goes and gets an insurer called ATE, After the Event Insurance. And that means that their legal bills are completely covered. So it's basically a collusion between two parts where one of you pays for the other one's insurance. Do you get it? It's like third-party fire and theft. It's a complete swindle. So the person that pays the millions of pounds for the legal team against the other person who is not paying their legal team at all, because their legal team saying, well, you're going to win. Yeah. And if not, the coffers of the person who's paid the millions of pounds go into their after the event insurance coffers. So I think the whole thing's a monstrous swindle. But the good news is, if you keep prodding for long enough, you chip through and insurers start, you know, going, oh, we don't have any money. And, you know, judges start going, this stuff needs to be dealt with in court. So I can't really say any much more.
But it's interesting that you are getting a large amount that I'm sure you'll share eventually, but it is a large amount for Britain. But the problem is, like, our legal system, in comparison to what happens over here, people sue for millions over here. It's actually
ridiculous. I know. I love it. It's also like a small prison sentence in America. Well, I mean, not a small one, but like, if you kill a second degree murder sentence in America, it is, you know, often like 30 or 50 years to life with the possibility of parole when you're a very old man or right. woman. Whereas in England or Canada or one of them, what do you call them? You call them retarded and gay or whatever. What do you call it?
Who?
No, just like you say things are gay and simple or retarded. What do you call it?
Fake and gay?
Fake and gay, that's the one. So in England, like, you can do the most heinous thing in the whole world and you get 25 years. You very rarely would hear of someone getting a whole life tariff.
Right, at most. In fact, the worse the crime, the more likely you are to have a lesser sentence and to be let out early, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The lesser the crime, the longer. If it's social media or speaking the truth, you can guarantee they're going to throw the book at you. Whereas if you grate a child or murder someone, you know, that's our system. Well,
the thing is, inevitably this system is going to break. When the president of America is turning around and the president of England, and we spoke about the Rubio speech, but the prime minister of England is...
Well, he's got a new speech.
Takes prodding. No, but I mean, I put the AI speech up where he was talking about the state of UK, Britannistan, which is essentially what it is. Another stabbing today, big stabbing yesterday in Edinburgh, major stabbings all the time. You just think, these people are traitors. They're fully, full-on traitors. So I'm actually, what I'm motivated by is the fact that I live in England. So if someone goes to my Twitter feed and goes back, my amazing wife, put a video up of the dog swimming today in the sea, and it's very much in England. And I was with her and we were walking, we were talking about life and what our plans were and what we wanted to achieve. And part of me was going, I really want to celebrate my happiness. But then there's this sort of jinxy part of me that goes, I'll probably get diagnosed with, you know, thumb cancer or something if I say that I'm really happy. But here's one final thing before I ask you how you are. Our lefties and those that hate life and like aborting children and killing people early and all of that sort of stuff, the kind people, you know, the happy, kind people, they're always talking about their mental health, right? I have, understandably, had a period in my life which has been very, very hard. And during that period, there were periods during that period where I found it very, very difficult to cope.
Yeah.
And I could not breathe. My chest was so tight, I couldn't cope. I couldn't breathe. So I went to my doctor and my doctor prescribed me a set of pills. And I blithely took them. And today is 2 months since I took the last one of those. And that was a horrible and painful experience to get myself off those drugs. And I'm really grateful for it because they had, they took dry your mouth out. They're just not good. So I'm now 2 months clean and sober for the kind people from anti-anxiety medication. And also I meet so many people because I mention it now in conversation because why not? The number of people in this country that are on drugs for whatever. It's great. They love them. Anyway, how are you, dear boy?
Yeah, I think just on that, though, I think it's sad that we have a whole industry that continues to look for symptoms to treat and push drugs upon people and keep people sick rather than actually healing people. It's dire. I'm sure Lizzie's got a lot to say about that. But
well, she does, but it's difficult. The thing is about a relationship with God is that he doesn't guarantee you that you're going to be, you're not going to suffer at all.
No.
In fact, it's kind of celebrated. It's like, it's good for you, dear boy. It's yeah. like the old English way. It's like, an hair on your chest.
Stiff upper lip.
Yeah, exactly. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm out to wait. I'm going to ask you again because I'm going to have to put this light on because okay. the light is going down already. Right. Hopefully that didn't change the whole thing too much. Okay. Right. How are you?
I'm good. I had a digital detox on Monday. So Sunday night when I went to bed, I turned my phone off and I didn't turn it back on for 24 hours. And it was so good. Really good. Just I pottered. I chilled out. I haven't had a day off this year so far. I mean, I know Instagram would suggest otherwise. I've managed to make it to the beach while I was in Florida for an hour, but then that day I spent 5 hours publicly speaking and stuff. So it's like it. What looks like a break isn't a break. I genuinely haven't had a day off this year so far. So I had a day off on Monday. And it was just wonderful. I caught up on some Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I went through old family photographs. I sorted some stuff that needed sorting. I just didn't check X. Facebook, Instagram. I feel overwhelmed with messages from, you know, emails, DMs, text messages, WhatsApp messages, Telegram, Signal. It's like, I'm too accessible, I realize. So I need to figure out a way, because you can't tell people, oh, only message me on this day or this time, or only use this messaging platform. It doesn't work. You know, you've tried that with just message this phone, not that. It doesn't work, does it? I need to make myself less accessible because it's overwhelming.
It does work if you get a phone, which I now have, which isn't this one. I now have a phone of which literally only Lizzie has the number. Then it works. Yeah. But you can't give it to your family. You can't give it to anyone. You give it to your wife, right. Or in your situation, your closest person.
Well, my church wardens. Like, I told them what I was doing, and if anything urgent came up, they'd know how to get to reach me. But because I have to be reachable, but at the same time, we're just far too accessible in general these days. And I'm obviously not a celebrity like yourself or famous, but I'm well known enough that so many people contact me, and it's lovely. But I don't have I may be well known, but I'm not rich enough to afford a PA, and so I don't have a managerial system of filtering that. So it all just bombards me all the time. And so it's like some things are important. Some things are urgent, and like just filtering that out is a challenge itself. And some things are from people that you know, some things are from strangers, and like you do want to give back to your supporters and the strangers, but at the same time, there's just too much contact.
It is strange, isn't it, the modern world that I know people talk about it all the time, but it's this thing of bringing, we're meant to all be brought closer together, but actually we're just more annoying. And so before you and I did Fox and Father, we'd speak on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, but now we just use Fox and Vala for our catch-up time, as well as talking about the issues of the day, which I suppose actually is quite a nice and lovely thing. But we used to, like, speak to each other on the phone and go, how are you doing?
I usually just pop round on a Sunday and just catch up properly. I've never been very good at calling people. I'm better now that I have a car, because I'm trapped in a vehicle where I can't be on my phone. I can't be doing this, that, and this. So I have time, or I'm forced to have time. So that's what I usually call. That's what I do call you and catch up. But I've always been terrible at calling people, because there's always something that looks more immediate that you need to give your attention to.
I don't like calling people. I'm not going to lie. I'm just going to put it out there. I don't like calling people.
You're always on the phone.
I know, but not.
You're on the phone more than anyone else I know, other than my mother.
I love your mum. I'm going to take that as a compliment. Yeah, can we talk about, we're 20 minutes in, we've discussed absolutely nothing. I mean, I forgive the poor old Fox and Father.
It's true.
People, know, why aren't we like structured today on Fox and Father swipe?
Let's catch up to the end then. Let's start. If you want to start with the topics, let's start with the topics and then come to.
Well, what are the topics? I don't have
It is Fox and Father. It's not Fox News, you know. It's like...
No, I know. I'm also not complaining. I find it pretty lovely that it's like that. I think it's so much better just to have a conversation than it is to, like, go, tonight on Fox and Father.
Well, today in World War III news, Marco Rubio has officially stated that Iran... that the US was dragged into war with Iran because of Israel. He said Israel was going to bomb them regardless, and we knew that Iran would retaliate, and hits America. So we had to preemptively strike. So my prediction was right. We've been dragged into this war because of Israel. Also,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of obvious, though, isn't it? Because
people saying, oh, it's because of the nuclear weapons. Well, the nuclear weapons were wiped out. In fact, J.D. Vance has gone on record saying we had to do this because of their nuclear operation. They wiped out, they destroyed their nuclear operation last, was it June or July?
I don't buy that. I do think there's something quite interesting about this. And I want to know what your view as a teacher would be. So I imagine Israel, and I don't mean this pejoratively to Jewish people. I mean this as just an observation of Israel. Israel seems to be really well armed. It's got like laser domes and, Israel is pretty...
Great like, military, yeah.
If the Middle East was a playground, Israel would be the big kid.
Absolutely.
Who's walking around, can slap anyone out of the place, and there's no school monitors, really. Yeah. There's like America will turn up once in a while. So as a teacher, if Israel is the school ground bully, which, you know, I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying that's what I'm using the analogy for, who do you speak to in difficult times? You probably speak to the bully, not the person that's getting bullied.
As a teacher, you separate both of them and speak to them individually. But I think what Israel's done is they've got the school monitor on their side and said, we need to go nail this guy because he's going to beat your little sister, your little brother. We need to get him before he does. That's what's happened. But I just also want to point out the interesting thing that you did that we all do. You said, why is it Israel? And I don't mean anything against the Jewish people. You did that. Like when I criticize China, I never say, oh, but not the Chinese people, because no one would ever assume that. But people make these assumptions that when we talk about Israel in particular, we must hate the Jews. One of my best friends growing up was Chinese. Lovely, lovely girl called Bo San. Great, great kid. But we could criticize the Chinese government all day, every day. She would never, ever assume that I was criticizing her as a direct result of me criticizing either her government or her country's policies.
Yeah, but China is... Okay, sorry. I'm just going to push back a little bit on that. Israel, out of all of the nations in this whole world, Israel is the most socially constructed, fake social constructed country out of all of them, really. Like, other than Yugoslavia, places where they just went, nope, you're all going to be together. Bosnia-Herzegovina, Kosovo, Montenegro, you're all, I'm sorry, chaps, Chechnya, you're all... Israel was invented by it came about after the Balfour Declaration, am I correct? Correct me when I start going wrong. It was invented as a bad idea, essentially. Seems to me like it was done like a bad idea in a slightly sort of opposite communist way, which was to say, like, our compassion drives us to create the State of Israel. And what happens is they create the State of Israel. Everyone in the region goes, but that's not how it is. That's just not how it works here. So we've got an issue with that. So Israel then has to put walls up everywhere and start shooting at people all the time. Now, I don't blame... So when I'm saying I don't blame the Jews, I don't blame the Jews for being put in a position by some British politician with a conscience who thought that, creating a separate land...
By the Rothschilds, yeah.
To me, that's the less interesting part. To me, the interesting part is... I don't buy America's reason for bombing Iran to say we're trying to get rid of their nuclear program. I do buy regime change.
To me,
but
it is.
I also go, I'm a bit frightened by regime change because I go, okay, so on day one, it's like Ayatollah Khomeini and his, 60, 72 tiny versions finally met. But on day two, it's like Ahmadinejad is gone. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. Why is America allowed to rain fire from the sky down on everybody who it doesn't like? But I suppose that maybe that's the role of the most powerful nation on earth. Or maybe it's the hubris of a nation that's about to capitulate to China. I don't know. I'm interested. I'm sort of open-minded about it rather than being... dead set one direction or the other. Do you know what I mean? Mm. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that is the most interesting part, though. I had a message from a dear friend the other day. We're all deeply hurt by the rhetoric. Can you please just explain to me plainly, is it the government you are against, or are you attributing systemic corruption to the Jewish people? I need to hear you say it. Like, why would you need to hear me say it? I don't hate any groups of people. I'm a Christian. And it's just that instant assumption that people have been fed something for so long that they have to assume that any criticism of this one particular, like, I can criticize Bangladesh all day. It's a corrupt state. It really is. Doesn't mean the Bangladeshi people are corrupt. Doesn't mean the Bangladeshi people are bad or that I hate the Bangladeshi people. In fact, recognizing their state is corrupt means I love the Bangladeshi people because I want them to have a better state. Like their former prime minister was the aunt of my local MP, Tulip Sadiq, also a corrupt woman. And their political opponents get disappeared in Bangladesh. Awful. But no, any time I criticized Bangladesh during my campaigns in the Conservative Party, everyone went, yeah, it's corrupt. Not one person said, I'm deeply hurt by this. Can you just please explain to me? You're not saying it's a systemic, you're not attributing systemic corruption to the people, are you? No one would even think that way because it was stupid, frankly. But when it comes to it, people do, and it really bugs me. It's like people cannot separate these things out on purpose. They've been conflated. Well, the religion and the ethnicity have been conflated. The people and the government have been conflated. And the state of Israel from 1948 and the Israel of the Bible have been conflated. And it's the enemy that's doing all of those things on purpose to confuse people. It's deception.
Yeah. And I do think that that's not, I do think that that's correct. I can't argue with that. And I do think that I, in the same way that I like to be logically consistent, and if I can be intellectually consistent, in the same way as we're endlessly calling for moderate Muslims to come out and condemn, you know, the latest whatever, right. You know, and you don't hear them. You in the absence of you know, as you quite rightly say, this sort of every sentence is started with a I'm sorry and I love the Jews, but thing, that one must be able to have a sense of balance. I suppose the reason why people are going after you a bit is because it's a bit of a bee in your bonnet, and you are saying it a lot.
And the more they come after me, the more it becomes a bee in my bonnet. But it's just, right. You know, I was looking through some old Charlie Kirk videos, and every time he says, I've got to be really careful how I say this, but like, he would never say that with any other issue. Like, people are petrified. People are scared. And that's programmed into us. We're all in the West. We're scared to death, quite literally in some cases, of criticizing Israel, which leads me to believe they are the greatest threat in the West, which I've tweeted, because they are the ones dragging us into foreign wars. They are the ones getting us in trouble. And it's not good. And we should be able to criticize them. And I will continue to criticize them.
I'm a big fan of when... the revered holy scholar Khamenei, who was less vicious than Khomeini. I mean, watch The Naked Gun. That's a good film.
I've never liked about. Steve Martin.
I will. We'll do that another day. But, I'm a big fan of people, as you know, you're being straight up about your feelings on Israel. I have a very strong feeling on Islam.
Yeah. Islam is evil. It's an evil ideology.
Yeah.
We don't hate Muslim people. In fact, we love them.
That's the bit that really pisses me off, is the fact that I'm commanded to love my enemy as I love my neighbor and all that, but I'm commanded to love my own enemy. So that is an absolute invocation to love individual human beings, and to hurry and worship and pray for their, you know, the betterment of their souls and the saving of their souls. I'm not demanded to respect any, and I include Christianity in this, by the way, any other than because I believe it. Any other ideology or religion. Right. So if you try and stop me criticizing an idea by conflating the point which you're making about Israel and the Jews by saying that if I attack Islam, I'm somehow attacking Muslims. I'm not. I don't think, you know, and this whole restore, reform, all this crap that goes on when they're talking about ethnicity.
Like, we can criticize Islam now without instantly being called Islamophobic. That has changed recently. But I remember even, like, dear members of your family having serious sit-down conversations with, what are you doing here? Why do you hate these people? It's like, we can't always assume that disagreement is hate and criticism is hate, because it's just woke rubbish. It stops us being able to criticize anything.
Yeah. And also, it's the most, it's like a termite in your family to stop the criticism of something. So my father will say, if my son, who I took fishing, so lovely.
I just saw a short clip of you on the water. I didn't really see did you put anything out about what you caught?
Yeah, put up his fish that he caught. I didn't catch anything. Cool. He's better than me at everything. He said to me as we got in the car, he went, "I feel so free."
Oh.
And I went, I thought about it for a minute. I was like, I need to follow up on this and find out what he's meaning. And I said, "What do you mean?" He went, "You know when you feel free?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And he went, "That's what I feel."
That's such a male thing, isn't it? Every year I scale up and do the same thing to you, right? When we're out on that boat, that's when I'm my happiest. That's when I'm my freest, man. Bring Eugene out here. We'll go fishing on the lake on Lake Michigan.
We're lake trout fishing as salmon, well, which would salmon. Be and king salmon, which would be incredible.
But we can get trout near my new place. Let's do it.
So the captain, who recognised me immediately, was pro climate change. And
did he lecture on it?
Well, he knew that I was a slightly controversial figure. He didn't know what for.
Okay.
So he went, he was like, "Oh, you're that actor bloke." And he started, you know, obviously spending much more time with me than he did with the other one. And I was talking to him about, like, how the wind farm. He was like, he was just moaning about how bad the fishing was.
Oh.
And I was like, "Why is that?" And he said, "It's all about the climate." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And to be fair, he used a couple of good examples. He said, you know, when was the last time we had major catches of bluefin tuna off the coast of England? I was like, I don't know whether we fished for them back in the day. So who knows?
But we've had mass trawling from Europe. They've been like,
no, well, he debunked, he well, not debunked. I'll just offer what he said to me because he said that commercial fishermen blame stuff like foreign mega trawlers when actually the little smaller trawlers, they are the ones that nick the food. So they're the ones that put out 9,000 meters of netting and catch seals and spur dogs and all this sort of stuff. They're the ones that are the problem. And what they do is they blame up the ladder. And he actually brought up June Mumry. So I liked June.
No way.
And he was sat there and he went, "This you won't know her, but there's this woman called June Mumry." And I'm like, "Oh, I do know her. I really like June." And she's my Fox and Father Follows, by the way.
She does June nothing Mumry. To argue with me these days, but I love her to bits. She's great.
Anyway, it was a really lovely experience, father and son experience, which is ultimately what you want with your kid, is a time to be with them.
You've got to bring him out here on the water, honestly.
He also, ragworms are a nasty thing. Ooh. Like, they have little pincers that pop out the end of their nose, and, you know, a big one, that'll pierce your skin. And he was fascinated by them. He's picking them up. He's trying to get them to bite him. I was like, "I would never have done that at his age." He's threading them on the hook. And he caught a load of fish. He caught the first fish, the last fish, the biggest fish, and the most number of species. Eugene did.
Yeah.
And that's because he was the most dedicated and committed to the whole task. Anyway, we've gone totally off World War III. This is not what we're meant to bring up
about World War III. US troops report commanders framing Iran war as God's plan. First reported by independent journalist Jonathan Larson, a US combat unit commander told non-commissioned officers that the war on Iran is part of God's divine plan, allegedly claiming President Donald Trump was anointed by Jesus to ignite Armageddon. The complaint filed with the military religious Freedom Foundation is one of more than 110 logged within 48 hours from over 40 units across at least 30 installations. Complaints including Christians, a Muslim, a Jew, have requested anonymity to avoid retaliation. The Pentagon has yet to respond. They're literally telling their combatants that you're doing this for God. What?
Well, Islam's doing that, so why shouldn't the Christians do it?
Because it's not true. That's
I know, but
it reminded me of the evangelicals and the Zionists and the old dispensations, they all rely heavily on Revelation because they all misinterpret Revelation because it's the most difficult part of the Bible. And I was reading on the Catechism's teaching of it. It says, before Christ's second coming, the church must pass through a final trial that will shake the faith of many believers, by which man glorifies himself in place of God and of his Messiah come in the flesh. And I think that's where we are. That's the point of Revelation we're at, where Trump is being purported to be anointed by God. This war is apparently God's plan, divine plan, to bring about Armageddon because they want to see, well, the Christian Zionists think they're going to see. Well, I mean, it's going to bring about the Antichrist.
Well, okay, let me flip it for you for a second.
Go on,
perhaps you could say that, yes, all of that rhetoric is really unhelpful. But perhaps you could say that in the olden days, our crusaders went out to the East.
Yeah, at the behest of the Pope, the leader of Christians, not Donald, not the President of the United States.
Well, what is Pope Leo saying about at the moment, to be fair.
Pope Leo has had some good things to say. I retweeted him the other day. Pope Leo said, he expressed deep concern over recent events in the Middle East and Iran. He said, may diplomacy recover its role and may the good of peoples be promoted, peoples who long for peaceful coexistence founded on justice. So he's pro-peace and pro-justice. He's not saying the divine plan to spark Armageddon, go and kill the Iranians.
No, the most appalling part of any war, which the lefties pick up on much more than we do, even though, you know, Israel will tell you, and they're accurate and they're correct to tell you, that they're civilian collateral damage, because it's only the civilians who suffer really deeply in war. It's the innocents.
Yeah.
Israel will say, well, we per capita, per bomb, we kill less people. And it's like, well, I wouldn't give me a round of applause for killing less people.
Killing fewer people and still killing people.
I'm really, when I look at the Ayatollah hanging and blinding women for being great, I go, I'm anti-death penalty. I don't believe in the death penalty. I'm pretty pro that sort of thinking being not in charge of a country. I'm like, well, did he blow into 1,000 meters? That's a shame. He can now go off and be with his 72 virgins that he believes in. So, you know, it's a win-win for both sides. Do you know what I mean? These 16-year-old women are blinded and hung if they are raped by a man who has already insisted that he's got to cover her up because he gets horny if she's not covered up. I mean, this is caveman.
Yeah, I mean,
stuff.
We know they're evil. We know this is evil.
I want to bomb it, but I'm happy to bomb that stuff back in.
No one said we're going to go bomb Iran because they're evil Islamists. No one said that. They've said it's for the nuclear weapon, or it's because if Israel wanted to do it. It's never. And if it is a case of, well, they're evil, let's go do it, then why are we not policing the rest of the evil places around the world? Is that our job now? Are we the police of the world? If so, by which morality do we govern?
Yeah, the problem is the strength of your argument is that you're absolutely right. Who gave us, who handed us the gauntlet of truth to throw down in front of other nations? But I think that, my sort of devil's advocacy of the whole thing would be that Trump was put on this earth in order to do this thing that he is doing. I've not heard it from his mouth that it's God's work. He's just saying we're going to wipe out the evil people. And
that isn't
and when I watch, but when I, well, hang on. The flip side of that is Edinburgh yesterday. The guy with the Somalian guy the other day in America today. It no, is to go. Side. This is death. This is death cultism, and death cultism needs
elite pedophiles running the world, and they are still not being arrested or prosecuted or even hanged. Nothing is happening to them, and instead, we're fighting in a foreign war in a foreign land, Sam people against Sam people that has no interest, gives no interest for our countries whatsoever.
Yeah, but to me, you're just four moves ahead in the game. That's all. It's like you're literally just four moves ahead. Everyone will get to the place where you are in time. But first of all, they've got to get to the place where, like I say, where you go, well, you're obsessed with Ramadan and Ding Dong. I'm like, no, what I'm doing is I'm trying to make it okay. Because straight after 9/11, they went, you can't say anything negative about Islam. You're not allowed. And we can have a conversation about 9/11 another day as well, I suggest. But, you know, it was straight away. It was like Islamophobia. And this Islamophobia word, which is a non-meaning word. And so for me as an artist, that really pisses me off. We're now in a place where we can say Islam is a death cult. Without, I mean, Tommy's had a fatwa put on him. And no doubt, you know, and I do look over my shoulder when I'm walking around. I do. But we're in a position of saying it's okay to turn around to the Islamic death cult and say this is absolutely wrong. And I think that is genuinely progressive, rather than living in cowering fear to this stuff. Now, you're right to say, if you escalate it up the chain and go, well, does America have the right to kingmake? No, but they pretended that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction to go and steal his oil. And Alistair Campbell now has one of the most popular podcasts in Britain, and he was the architect of these lies.
Yeah. So, Peter Mandelson, who is working closely with Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% with you, which is that we need to clean up our own backyard before we start going cleaning up other people's backyards. Right, we've spoken about that for a long time. We need to speak about something else now.
Scottish stabbings, Calder's stabbing, man arrested after barricading himself in tower block. Two people are in hospital. Tell me about this.
Right, so yesterday there was another mass stabbing in England committed by what can only be described as a ghoulish-looking, golem-like character who was a total diversity is our strength import. And in the same way as you're saying, you know, it's not so much about whether they're evil or not, it's about whether we have the right to judge them. I go, it's obvious that this man is an evil, psychopathic lunatic. So who allowed him into my country? Who allowed him into my country? And those are the people that we should be holding accountable. Boris Johnson should be, in this wonderful world where people talk about international law and stuff like this, in British law, Boris Johnson is a traitor. He should be serving time, long amounts of it, for the blood that is being shed on his insane immigration policies and his insane way of looking at the world. I'm appalled.
Blood was shed in the Ukraine, and British soldiers and that kind of stuff should never happen.
But we're not in the Ukraine. Britain isn't in the Ukraine at the moment, really. I mean, we are, because we are. But we're
training up their soldiers out there for a long time. We've provided them with so much weaponry and arsenal that we shouldn't have. It was not our war. We love foreign intervention these days.
I think we like it less. I think Trump is the least interventionist foreign American president that we've had. Barack Obama, that literally I'm with you. Hear me out. The week after that, the Iranians took 30-odd, or I don't know how many it was, American troops off their boat in the Strait of Hormuz, Barack Obama gave them, like, pallets full of money. And it's like, the lesser of two evils is blowing the crap out of these people. I mean, ideally is to leave them all alone.
So,
and go, you know what,
Both Obama and Trump struck Afghanistan. Only Trump has struck Iran. Both of them struck Iraq. Both of them struck Libya. Only Trump struck Nigeria. Both of them struck Pakistan. Both of them struck Somalia. Both of them struck Syria. Only Trump struck Venezuela. Both of them struck Yemen. He can no longer say he is the least interventionist. Maybe in his last term.
Yeah, he's not. You're right. He's not this time around.
100%. He's even worse than Obama this time around.
Well, he's not an appeaser like Obama. So I would say that Trump is not an appeaser. Obama is an appeaser. He gave them hundreds of billions of American dollars to pay for the missiles that rained down on Israel and other places, you know. And whether you think that that's an okay thing and that Israel should have... What?
Who was Obama appeasing?
Obama was appeasing the Iran's nuclear program. Obama never took missiles to the Iranian nuclear program ever. Obama sent, I don't know what the exact number is, I think it's $150 billion American dollars, was delivered to them the same week as his own people were his own soldiers. And this is a broader point about how you treat, you know, anyone who's seen Rambo, John Rambo returns from Vietnam, PTSD'd out of his mind, and the film happens. Go watch it. It's a good film. And the way that we treat the people that do the dirtiest work for us, the way that governments treat... So Starmer, who always talks about, we are going to use our defensive forces, a strong defensive nation, while at the same time getting up the arses of SAS soldiers, of special forces soldiers, and of all this stuff with his endless bureaucracy to try and demonize just the people that were following the orders. And I know that there's an irony in that too. But, you know, I like Trump, is my answer. He's a strong leader. He doesn't want to put boots on the ground. He wants to blow the out of death cultists, and I'm not against that.
I think
that.
He's been stronger. I think he's gotten weaker. I think in his previous term, this wouldn't have happened. For Marco Rubio to get on air and say, look, we only entered this war with Iran because Israel strong-armed us into it, that shows a weakness in Trump that he should have been able to stand up to. I know Charlie Kirk would have been in his ear saying, this is a bad thing for us. Regime change isn't easy. This is not going to be good for Americans. You know, was it 3 or 4 or 5 Americans already dead in this war? No Americans should be dying for Israel or Iran. And I know Tucker Carlson, because I was speaking to his team just last week, was in the White House arguing against this. And so it is a lone voice now without Charlie. Goodness me, do we miss Charlie. But there are still some good voices out there. And my Fox and Father follows is going to go to our good friend Megyn Kelly, who said, I understand how this helps Iran. I can see how this helps Iran. I can see how this helps Israel. It is clearly Israel's war. I don't see how it helps America. And I understand her stance there completely.
It's very interesting that independents like Megyn are always about the truth. So they're not about ideology at all. She's very...
She's pro-Trump, against Trump, whatever works in line of truth, absolutely.
Yeah, and we need more independence in the world.
Yeah.
So one of the ways that we get there is we don't condemn, but we call out those that talk bullshit.
We were at the Trump inauguration. We were like big fans this time this year. I'm like, actually, what he's doing, I don't agree with. And we should be able to do that. We shouldn't be like party politics of, no, he's our guy. We must back everything he does, even if it's wrong. Like, if something's wrong, it's wrong. And if something's not truthful, it's not truthful. We need to hold these people to account.
Well, you must never back someone blind. You follow, you phone me. Hang on a minute. I'm just saying something. Sorry, because it's glitching. But you phoned me the day after I got fired by GB News, and you chastised me for how I behaved. Mm. And the first thing you did was say where I went wrong. Before you went, I'm really sorry that you've lost a job that is paying to, you know, have many legal battles with my former wife just to see my children. But, it's the thing was that you criticized, you loved me. That's what I thought it was. You were truthful. Mm. You know, whereas a lot of people are like, oh, it's so unfair. What have you done? You know, it's lots of people like that. Misogyny, blah, blah. You know, you phoned me up. You went, that was unwise. You behaved poorly. And then you went, by the way, I'm not going to go back on the Dan Whitten show because as far as I understand, my agreement is that I work with Dan Whitten. I don't work for them. I'm not their patsy bitch who does what they say. So that's always been your vibe. And I think that's why you and I get on so well, because we are, in the face of all of it, hopelessly or hopefully principled about issues. Yeah. So, and I think that's why our conversations are good, because we're never trying to, I'm never trying to say you're wrong. I'm trying to work out what it is that you think and why, which the world could benefit from. And maybe
if you do think I'm wrong, you're saying it in good faith. It's not, you're not trying to attack. We're not trying to attack each other. And that's what more people need to do, is like have open conversations where if you think someone's wrong, address it. And sometimes you find that they are wrong. Sometimes you find that they're not. That's okay.
Well, we've actually found a bit of a consensus really over this long conversations about Israel and stuff like that. And I still don't agree with you, but I totally understand.
Right.
And there are many, many parts of your argument that I'm very sympathetic to. And if life is about understanding and learning and being genuine fellowship with your fellow man, then that's what it's about. It's not about going, I'm going to impose my ideology on you. It's just not. And, you know, and people should listen to that. And, you know, they can't. I've been at this for a long time. You've been at it for a long time. If they can't, then you have to punish them. So that's where we would probably differ. Because when I got, and I'm going to be very limited about what I can say, but when I found out last week things that were going to happen, I knew that those things would happen in the end. And I knew that there would be punitive action taken against those that tried to destroy me. And I am left in a position where I go, well, I'm going to have to allow the very system that you created to destroy me to destroy you. And I'm not going to get in the way of it and try and find peace with that. Because it's very difficult as a Christian. I think I said to you last week when we were talking that I'd spoken to a very wise man who'd said that, you know, stay away from Islam, don't get involved, because it's such a European problem. Like, it's not even a British problem. And who does it benefit for Islam to take over the West? Nobody. It doesn't benefit anybody. So just stay away and stay on the high-end topics that you care about, which are freedom of expression and all that sort of stuff. And actually, we're entering into the darkest period in our collective history. You've pointed out as to why that is in America. You've said that Trump is now weak. And I think the midterms will show that. It'll take the Megyn Kelly independence off into a, you know, a decent Democrat Shapiro type area. And Britain is going to vote in a bunch of Greens or, you know, whatever. And who knows? But the only thing you and I have is just staying true down the course and down the path. And that's all we can do. Yeah. The sun is literally set during our conversation. I love it. It's so nice.
I've got my propane tank filled up with gas. I'm gonna grow some potatoes. Like, all we can do is try. I'm gonna get some chickens as well. I need your help on that. All we can do is try and live on the basic level in and with his creation. The politics, we can try and influence it, and we've had some success over the years, but we can try and influence it all we like. But at the end of the day, it's bigger than us, it's darker than us, and so we've got to do what's real and we've got to stick to what's true in all things.
I was meant to go to, can I share this? Yeah, I think I probably can. So my friend is staying in a hotel in Rome, the same hotel in Rome, that Mel Gibson and his producer.
Oh, cool.
For The Resurrection of Christ is
there. Yeah, I can't wait for this.
I've worked with Mel Gibson. So he's like, they come into the bar every night, come out, because also the best showbiz meetups are random ones.
Right.
And so I was due to fly out to Rome today and go and see my pal and have a good time with him. And also hopefully bump into Mel and go, hey, Mel, do you remember me? I was in The Professor and the Mad Band. We worked together. By the way, they destroyed my career. And, you know, if you want to stick me on, if you want to make me one of the demons or the angels or whatever, I'm all good for it. And then I didn't, because a certain politician who I will not name sent a message to me and Jeffrey, my friend Jeffrey, and said, I'm finally ready to sit down and talk. I'm ready. So I said, all right, cool. I'll come meet you on Monday.
Oh my gosh. Lawrence, you offered a clear choice there between your vocation as an actor and your meddling in politics. And you chose politics.
I know. Lesson
learned. Is it too late to change your mind? This, leave this politician to do whatever this politician wants to do.
Hang on, you went robotic there for a second. Say that again.
Just leave this politician to do whatever this politician wants to do. This politician's had plenty of chances. You've provided plenty of opportunities that they have not wanted to take up. And now that they're ready, they expect you to bend at their whim. No, go and spend time with Mel Gibson and try and reclaim the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's a lesson learned. I hate being told or being, I don't like being told when I've made a mistake or gone, you know, I like being told. I don't like being chastised for making a mistake because we all make them.
Others do.
So I learned, absolutely, I learned this week that the next time people that you're trying to help who don't actually want your help turn around and say, are you available at Monday, on Monday at 11 a.m.? And I'm like, I can be. I'll move my plans around. But ultimately,
you've still got time. I will be back, but I've got to go now to Britain.
You're going to England?
For a family member's wedding, who I won't mention their name because they're very private. I fly out on Wednesday, land on Thursday. The wedding is on Friday. I'll spend Saturday with my nieces, and then Sunday I fly back. So by the time this airs, I'll already be back. It's like, but if I can do that from America to Britain, you can pop over to Rome by Monday.
Well, I am, and also my new iteration is going to be that I haven't hired somebody for a very, very long time. I've fired a lot of people because I can't be asked dealing with people and teams and various things that I don't need, and they cost money, and what's the point? So I'm going to hire someone, I hope. I pray, actually. On Thursday, I'm going to hire somebody who is going to implement, because it's necessary that I'm not involved. It is necessary in the stages as I see them. I'm hoping to hire someone on Thursday to be part of my team. Good. And it's going to be, I'm interested. I'm really interested. Anyway, we got some questions, I think. You need to do those. So June Mummery is my Fox and Father Follows, by the way.
Who is?
June Mummery.
Okay. Nick Fuentes is my second Fox and Father Follows because of course he's so much right. The more the time goes on, the more I see he was right on so many of these issues. Not all of them, but a lot of these issues. Power Pulse UK said, does the UK risk losing influence by distancing itself from the US?
Yes.
I don't think the UK has much influence left at the moment, but it can certainly regain some of it. But I don't think that you gain it by following the US. I think the UK needs to become its own entity again, rather than just following the
US. All right, slow down. Would
the US, but Britain's power isn't, Britain's strength isn't from following the big guy around, it's from being the big guy.
Okay.
Global Geo fan said, could this Iran conflict drag the world toward a larger war?
We're already at war. We're in a world war. It's just soft. It's like the in 1939 when they I loved studying this period in history, the bit where nothing happened, and the same in the First World War where nothing happened at the beginning. No one died, nothing happened, but we were at war. We are at war. We're at war with the Middle East. We're at war with Islam, actually, and people don't get it yet, but they will.
It's good. Debate 8845 said, can the likes of the United Nations still play a meaningful role, or are they powerless in the face of unilateral military action? I think they are powerless and they should be powerless. I think they're corrupt and they need disbanding. That's my take. The United Nations and NATO should be gone. Lawrence, what do you think?
I remember sitting in my history class at school with my history teacher, Ross Beckett. And
shout out to Ross Beckett.
Shout out to Ross Beckett. He's probably not with us anymore, but hopefully he is. On the wall of the history class was maps of Europe throughout the ages. So going from 1600s till 19, whatever it was, 90, I suppose, when I was at school. And Poland was huge, then it was small, then it was huge, then it was small, and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it did strike me that he said, I remember having a lesson on the League of Nations, and I imagine he was quite a conservative dude. And he said the League of Nations were just utterly useless. And then they brought in the UN. What do you guys think? And I was like, well, why is it any different? So socialist believers in international law and all of this sort of strange idea that international law in some way trumps sovereign national law. I'm just like, go F yourself.
There's no such thing as international law in each country. Sovereign
it's law. Like Islamophobia. It's the same thing. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
I think that's right. Shall I close us out in a prayer?
Yes.
Today is the second Sunday.
Oh,
no, it's the third Sunday in Lent.
Oh, no, you're doing Lent rather than saints.
If
okay, that's good.
Criticize my prayers one more time.
What?
We're going to have beef.
Are we? I like beef with you.
I don't like when people criticize prayers.
I don't criticize prayers. I just want prayers that all of our audience, they're non-Catholics and also.
Well, they can all become Catholics. They can all enter
the form. Maybe that's a bit fundamentalist.
It's such a, I like this, I like that. No, I just pray how I pray. If people don't like it, they don't like it. That's their problem. It's like children when you sit down these days, they're like, what do you want for supper? What would you like? Would you like some of it? No, you just get what's in front of you. If you eat it, you eat it. If you don't, you don't. That's
I'm
my.
I'm so looking forward to you having that conversation. With your son and daughter.
There is no.
Okay.
In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, amen. We beseech thee, Almighty God, look upon the hearty desires of thy humble servants and stretch forth the right hand of thy majesty to be our defense against all our enemies. Through Jesus Christ, thy Son, our Lord, who liveth and reigneth with thee in the unity of the Holy Spirit, ever one God, world without end. Amen.
Amen.
A good prayer for this time, I think.
Yeah, I do. I agree. Well, I will say that in the time that we've been on the blower, the sun is now set out there.
Look
at
that.
And the view from our bedroom in the morning, even when it's stormy and crazy, is pure joy. And I thought to myself today, when it's such a pretty day, the last 2 days, I just thought even in London, I would have felt oppressed by this. And my final thought, so you offer a prayer and I'll offer a thought.
Yeah.
Diversity is our greatest enemy. There is no greater enemy than diversity of anything other than thought.
Mm-hmm.
And do not judge people on their colour of their skin, judge them on the content of their character and whether or not they follow the death cultist. Love ya.
Good advice. Love you too, brother. See you next time. Thanks for watching.
Bye, guys.